Our final guest this afternoon is Professor Shabir Mahdi, Professor of Vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand. Shabir, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having me.
What would you say to Johan Blake, hearing that he'd rather not go to the Olympics than get a vaccine?
Mind-boggling.
Okay. Stage one last night was a bit unexpected because normally there's a fair bit of speculation ahead of the fact of a family meeting. The one on Sunday night wasn't foreshadowed in that way. The downgrading to level one, something that you would support?
So, John, I think it was a nuanced approach in that it's not the same type of level one that we went into in August, September of last year, where we simply opened up and allowed for mass gatherings to take place, which partly contributed to the resurgence that we experienced around about November. So this time around, it seems to be a more measured approach in that although there are some mass gatherings that have been allowed, that has been limited in terms of numbers. But if we're not careful, allowing for those sorts of mass gatherings lends itself to super spread events, which could lead to a resurgence much sooner than later. And I think that's probably one of the most important take-homes from last night.
Does it mean that a third wave might have been avoidable but now becomes almost certain and perhaps almost certain sooner than would have been the case if we'd stayed on level three?
Certainly, but I think at the same time we need to be pragmatic in terms of, as a country, what we can achieve with ongoing lockdowns. There's no way that COVID is going to disappear, irrespective of whether we're at level three or going back to level one. And we need to allow for livelihoods to continue existing. So I think it is sort of a middle ground. But again, the important thing is that we're probably going to experience a resurgence. And it's just about what happens during the Easter period particularly, which will probably influence the timing of that resurgence and possibly the magnitude as well.
In the unlikely event that 97.25% of South Africans behaved sensibly and adhered to the non-pharmaceutical interventions, social distance, mask wearing, and so on, would that resurgence be kept at bay? Or does it come no matter what?
Well, my opinion is that it is going to come irrespective. And the reason for that is what will probably influence the resurgence as well is that as we head into the cooler months of the year in May, June, and people are more likely to gather indoors in poorly ventilated spaces, unfortunately that sort of behavior which you can't really avoid is going to lead to an increase in transmission of the virus. So I don't think staying at level three, even with the ban on mass gathering, necessarily means that we'll be able to mitigate a resurgence. But it's really the magnitude of it, which we can sort of manage by, and as well as the pressure that's placed on the healthcare services by allowing for the sort of infections to be drawn out rather than occurring very rapidly, which is what we experienced in November. But that was also sort of influenced because of the variant that was more transmissible.
And there's some fairly heavy-hitting scientists, Shabir, who've argued that maybe 30 million people, 50% of the population, have been infected already. I mean, if that is true or nearly true, and if the reason for much lower infection rates in Khayelitsha during the second wave was because in the first wave, so many people in Khayelitsha were infected without being tested positive, doesn't that also minimize the prospect of a resurgence anything like the one that we had in November?
So the Khayelitsha experience was quite interesting, and I wouldn't say that there were many people infected in Khayelitsha during the second wave, but rather there were fewer severe cases and deaths that occurred in Khayelitsha compared to other parts of the metro where there was less infection that took place the first time around. What I do know about a variant is that infection with original virus doesn't protect against mild and moderate infection due to the variant. But in all likelihood, the Khayelitsha experience suggests that infection at least protects against severe disease. So it is sort of, it's more than just a black and white issue. There are different sort of levels to it. But in all likelihood, by now, at least half of South Africans have been infected during the course of the first and second wave. But whether how that actually impacts on what we will experience moving forward partly depends on the virus itself, whether it continues developing mutations that become even resistant to the antibody that's been induced with this wave that has just passed. But I think the optimistic part of it is that it seems that this past infection, irrespective of whether it was from the variant or the original virus, at least protects against the severe disease. And that's really the space that we're wanting to be operating under, that we can at least prevent severe disease and death from COVID-19, rather than believing that we can prevent infections from taking place.
The president told us last night that the vaccination of health workers is going really well, and he put some not entirely precise new vaccine deals on the table, saying second quarter, third quarter, and so on, suggested that the second phase, so after the health workers who want to be vaccinated have been vaccinated, second phase, people over the age of 60 or 65, essential workers, people with comorbidities, might start end of April, perhaps beginning of May. So if it takes us February, March, April, 3 months to vaccinate 1.5 million health workers, we're going to have to move some to vaccinate the 20 million people in phase two before the end of the year.
Well, certainly, and unfortunately, I don't think that a vaccine that becomes available in April or May is going to assist us much in terms of the resurgence we're likely to experience towards the middle of the year. Because like you mentioned, it's going to take time to roll out those vaccines. But hopefully we can get those vaccines as quickly as possible come the second quarter. And it really needs to be a very focused approach in terms of trying to do a prioritization even amongst the high-risk groups as to who's at greatest risk of developing severe disease and dying. And then we need to work out the logistics in terms of ensuring that we can get them vaccinated over the shortest period of time as possible. And it might well serve our purpose to already start that exercise now and almost, in a sense, book people to be vaccinated once the vaccine arrives in April, rather than opening up a program inviting people only when the vaccine arrives.
Because I mean, if the projected rate for healthcare workers, which works out at roughly 400,000 health workers a month, then to vaccinate the 20 million people in stage two before you get to the stage three people, then you're talking about more than a year and a half. So something has got to be done to speed up the rate at which vaccines are being delivered into arms.
I fully agree with you, but I think we just need to be cautious about extrapolating from the experience with healthcare workers, because this is not being done as part of a rollout, but rather as part of an implementation study, and they're fairly limited in terms of where the vaccinations can take place. Once we go public with an immunization program, it obviously increases the number of places and the number of people that can be involved, but it's all about planning, and that planning needs to have started last year already for us to be effective once we do have the vaccines in hand.
Professor Shabir Mahdi, as always, thank you very much for your time and your expertise. Professor of Vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand.